Welcome to the Stories of School Leadership podcast, the podcast where we elevate the voices of and create connections between inspirational leaders from the UK and around the world. I'm Emma Lurie, and thank you for joining me as I share these journeys, inspirations and stories of education, leadership and life. In the first episode of the second series, I am joined by Stephanie Carlin, who shares her experience of getting into teaching and her experiences of middle leadership, which are really interesting. And she talks powerfully about making the decision to leave and step into her coaching role now, which is really exciting. She really helped me to understand framing our careers in a slightly different way. So I really hope you enjoy this one. Let's get into it. Welcome, Steph. It's so great to have you. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with me. It would be really great to just know who you are and where you're from, and then we will crack on with all the nitty-gritty.
Hey, I'm Stephanie Carlin. I'm a former head of humanities, and I'm in a very cloudy Lancashire this morning. So that's where I've been, lived all my life, but there was a little bit of teaching experience in Lincoln as well.
Thank you so much. So at the start of all of the podcasts, I get really nosy and want to find out a little bit about people's own schooling experience and how that was for them. So I'd love to hear about your own kind of school journey, and then we'll get into talking about how you stepped into teaching yourself.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the fact that you've started here, because I think so much of school and school experience does play out in later life, and definitely choosing to be a teacher. So I went to my local primary school and then secondary school in the next town. And generally speaking, school was quite a happy time for me. I enjoyed learning, really. Definitely a bit of a geek, which I have never lost. And the other real thing I just remember through school was sport. I loved playing sport, and that was everything, really. So yeah, it was a really enjoyable time, mostly. My mum was a school governor as well, so I think that also has that impact of you start to see school from a different angle once you have that experience. And I think it was definitely a different time to compared to teaching, in terms of it was still measured on a star to C, and I was, you know, a solid C grade student, so I was never going to drop off the end. And that maybe meant in some lessons I was just sort of there making up the numbers rather than being the student that was ever pushed. And I do remember my English teacher, she came in and she was the one that really transformed it for me, because she showed me I could do more in English, and then I realized I could do more everywhere. So that was that kind of teaching moment of, wow, teachers can really have an impact.
What did she do? Can you remember specifically?
She was just she just involved everybody. She, you know, really basic, knew everyone's name, but, you know, she would work round the classroom and give you that sort of one-to-one feedback. And it was just an enjoyable classroom, really.
So if you see feel visible, there's nothing worse than being that, like, in the middle bit, isn't there, where,
yeah,
like, not the top, not the bottom, just right in the middle, you can get really lost. Okay, yeah. So when did you start to think about teaching as a career choice?
Yeah, you know, I don't know whether there was like a moment, but I knew I had to have history in my life. Like, I just loved history. I loved finding out about, you know, different places, different times. So I remember being really, I have to pursue that. And when I finished university, yeah, I didn't have a lot of confidence. So the idea of teaching sort of made sense, but I was like, I cannot stand up in front of, you know, that many people and do this. You know, that's not for people like me. And I had a real sort of struggle out of uni, because, you know, you've got to then go to interviews and all these things, and I just couldn't do it. I didn't believe in myself. I could talk about history, but I couldn't talk about myself. So I ended up doing the management scheme at Tesco because I'd work, or other supermarkets are available. But I ended up doing the management scheme there because I'd worked there from being 16 and all the way through my education. And I remember getting to the end of that management scheme, and I bumped into my old high school head teacher, interestingly, and she was like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "I don't know, actually, because now I can talk in front of people because I'm talking about waist figures and all these things that I don't care about." And I just remember having this conversation. I can tell you exactly where we were stood in the supermarket, and I remember just having this conversation, and she was just like, "Just ring up school, go back to school, like, go and see if you like it." So I did. And obviously there was only one teacher there that I actually remembered. But I went in and I watched this different teacher teach the same lesson to two different ability groups, and just remember being like sort of fascinated about how that content was changed and that whole process. And I was like, yeah, that's it. So I was supposed to do my management sign off that weekend, and I just went in and was like, I'm not doing it, because I knew if I got the that manager wage, I'd be trapped. So I just said, I'm not doing it, and I had to work nights until I could get on a PGCE course, and the rest is history, I guess.
Ah, what a good link. That's amazing. Do you look back and wonder if you hadn't met your head teacher on that day, what would have happened? Like, would there have been other routes into it?
Yeah, I can't now, like, I can't imagine a world where I wasn't a teacher. So yeah, I think I've got to believe, and I was already sort of having the like, is this it? I'd done like fresh food, so it was really fast paced and a lot of decision making, and at that time you still got to do your orders yourself, so you were like using your brain and all this kind of, and then I got on put onto grocery and it was just slow, and I just didn't care about tins of beans. I just didn't, and some product lines didn't sell like all month. You'd like sell one a month, like, and just refill that. I was like, I cannot do
This is not
this.
my
And
life. I really love hearing about how to. It's so fascinating, and some people do go down that really straight. Like, I always knew, from a child I wanted to teach, and then other people don't. Because I remember at teenage and being a teenager thinking, I have no idea what I want to be. I mean, I still tell my children I don't know what I want to grow up, even though they tell me I'm really old, because it's really hard, isn't it, to know? And then, unless you've experienced, so like you going into that classroom and getting that feeling, that's so transformational. But actually, you don't get to do that with 25 or 50 jobs, do you? You just kind of have to figure out like what is that like? Think about on paper, is that going to be a job I want to do? Oh, well, I'm glad that happened. That sounds like a really good route in. So then, after your PGCE, did you go into history teaching at humanities?
So it came to the part of applying for jobs, and again that kind of confidence issue was there again. And I remember just thinking, like, some of it was like, it was just even putting off applying, let alone getting to interview. And I went to a couple of interviews, and the schools were, I'd had training in two really nice schools, and the behaviour challenges that I then saw on these two interviews were like, whoa. So I didn't get through those first ones because I literally had no idea how anybody would teach in there. So they definitely weren't the jobs for me. And then I remember one Sunday just thinking like, well, you can go anywhere, actually. You don't have any routes. So I just like picked, I obviously read about the schools, but I just picked some random locations where I liked the sound of the school on paper. And yeah, I ended up, so my first job was in Lincoln, in a small town in outside the city. So I like relocated and had a really nice sort of few years there. And it was a school that was down the road from a grammar school, which again was this whole new experience for me of the two tier system. And and that, you know, learners sort of came into that school already feeling, you know, not good enough because they hadn't got into the grammar. And, you know, that really started to become something that I was quite passionate about, that how have we got an education system that is sort of dictating people's lives or how they feel about themselves, you know, this early on.
And I guess that, I imagine, was linked to how you felt at school without that confidence and your journey into teaching. And then actually you're seeing young people around you who are potentially sharing some of that confidence and self-esteem challenge.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that is something that has stayed through my kind of story and, you know, what I'm doing now. And what I realise now through the coaching is that it is so common. Like, there are so many, even people that on the face of it you think are absolutely, you know, like you'd aspire to kind of be able to come across like them or whatever, and then actually they're having this inner battle of proving to their 9-year-old version of themselves that they're good enough to be here. Or, and I'm just like, wow, this is something to talk about, because actually
it's
we're all doing a good
it's
job.
So complex, isn't it? And I think the work, I mean, and I've had some really great work that schools are doing with a kind of a coaching culture with their students, because this is a sort of, like you said, we need to talk about this, we need to talk about this for adults, but absolutely we need to talk about it for children as well. So currently you coach, that's part of what you do at the moment, but let's just go back to kind of the getting into leadership. So I know you had like a journey in middle leadership, so after your first few years, what happened then and how did you step into that leadership? Because that must have been like another leap up.
The great thing about Lincoln was that it had huge opportunities because it was such a small school. And so I got some really great training there. And I got a TLR for PSAT within my first year, I think it was. So you get these, you know, really good experiences. And certainly the, you know, teaching was so good for me because I just... you know, even my first day in Lincoln, my first class was year 11. You never want to take on someone's year 11. I remember like walking in and they did not care that I was there. They didn't care who I was. They felt betrayed by their previous teacher who'd left them. And it was like, you know, you've got to take control of this. You've got, and so just from being a teacher and, you know, whether it's classroom experience or leading school trips or that small TLR, you know, those things just were this steady sort of growth and development. So I'm really sort of thankful for that first job, really. The flip side of it was that I was the only history teacher and it felt like nothing had been changed since the 1970s. So there was a heck of a lot of curriculum work that went on there. But again, you know, it's, I can change this. I can, you know, do this. People are happy. I then kind of had a detour because I'd got a bit homesick and I was ready to come home. And the head teacher sort of persuaded me to stay for one more year. And I just shouldn't have. And it got to that September and I was just like, I do not want to be here. Like, I just want to be at home. So I just took a job that meant I could start in February half term and just come home. So I took a temporary contract, moved back to the Northwest, moved back in with mum and dad, which I'm not going to lie, I absolutely loved. it was just nice, you know, having been away for 4-ish years, it was just so nice to just be there. And the school finished at 2:45, so I had a good work-life balance.
Wow,
and I was
living
going
the dream.
To the gym and I was seeing my friends and I was just trying to just be a good teacher and reconnect with life a little bit. So it was kind of good, but it was a school that didn't really align so much with my values, and it was sort of right in the middle of the very toxic Ofsted and Education Secretary duo that, and it, you know, it was things like your marking didn't count unless it was on the sticker. Like if you've written, you know, written in the margin, you know, that can't possibly give any value to a learner and all these kind of things. So it just didn't really sit well. And as much as things were kind of really improving for me as a person, there was a bit of, that's probably where my first thoughts of, is education really for me? Because this is absolute, I can't think of a word that's not a swear word. Nonsense. Thank you.
You can swear as well, that's fine.
So I kind of had a few thoughts there, and there were bits of the leadership that just, you know, they weren't my people and I definitely wasn't theirs. And I was like, is this what I want? And then I thought, well, I can't, I've had two schools. One was really positive. This is that, you know, you can't, you know, if I give up now, then that toxic education's won. So I started to look for another school. But again, that really taught me that you have to choose a school where your values fit. So yeah, my final school, I spent the last 7 years of my career there, and I absolutely loved it. It was very learner-centred. They introduced me to transactional analysis, so, you know, how to communicate, you know, well and with others, and there was coaching. There was sort of so much about both well-rounded adults and well, you know, rounded young people. And that's really where the leadership journey started, to come all the way back to your question, because I went there as second in humanities. So that was kind of the first proper middle leadership experience.
And what was that like stepping into that? How does it feel stepping into kind of middle leadership in second? My experience all primary, so I'm fascinated to know what that's like.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The school were great. They gave me the sort of the first half term and were like, just, you know, settle in, you know, be a great teacher, learn, you know, learn how the kids' names, you know, learn how we do things here. And again, because they use transactional analysis, it was like a whole new language suddenly turned up as well. So the first half term was just, you know, becoming a good teacher. And I really thought about that a lot as I've gone through these experiences, or as I talk to leaders and things like that, because so much of it is you get a job title and you're expected to know everything, you know, like the first hour you have that job, that's it. And actually, I when I look back on that and think, wow, that was really good that that school gave that time. And the head of humanities, who's now one of my best friends, we were two very different people. So she was just outcome, outcome, outcome. And I was like, well, there's a more efficient way to do that. Or if we do that differently, you know, it will have this impact instead and blah, 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 blah. So like we first sat down to like do something together and she was like typing. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, we're not even. So we had to do all this work to discover how we could work together. But you know, it was so worth it because we were a really great partnership. She got promoted, I got promoted to the head of. And that was nice because we'd worked so much as a partnership that actually, as becoming head, it was like, well, actually, this is already sort of my vision for the department because we'd made that together anyway. So I had quite a nice transition in terms of the department. So it gave that space to then learn, okay, so where does this fit in the whole school model?
I think we don't do that, and it's hard because the way that education is, it's so fast paced, and it just, you kind of year by year by year, aren't you? So if you kind of haven't got anything started by February half time, you think, oh Christ, we've failed, like we've got to go. And it is really fast paced, but that is something that's so important, to just take the time. Things take time, relationships take time to grow, jobs in terms of what that's supposed to look like takes time to evolve. But I have found, and I see it so often, it's really hard to
not be impatient and not rush through it, and actually create that space to allow things to grow and evolve, because they'll be better if we do that. But I mean you just think about the history of, like, you talked about different accountability measures or different different strategies that come in, that we get flash panned, don't we? We've got to do this, do this, do that, and people get it up and running because you feel like you've got to, and actually things are so much better when we go slowly. It's just difficult to make it happen in that way.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. And what one of the kind of defining parts of my middle leadership experience was that for various reasons, you know, some of them were promotions, some of them sickness, some of them just reshuffles, I ended up with not having a consistent, you know, line manager. And, you know, that was really difficult because, you know, people come in wanting to show that they've had an impact or they've made a difference, or, you know, you've got to change this or you've got to do it this way. And it's like, well, no, actually, this is working and that's my job. Like, making this bit work is my job. Whereas, you know, supporting somebody that, you know, wants to show something else or has their agenda or has to prove they've turned this department around, even though it's actually functioning really well. Like, you know, all of those different things. So there's definitely a part of middle leader experience that is so dependent on the agenda of those around you.
And I, obviously the school you were at before didn't necessarily have that leadership element, but you did talk about some of those challenges around sort of the leadership and the things that were difficult. Are you willing just to share with us some of the things that you felt didn't work for you and didn't align with your values?
So that school was incredibly hierarchical, and it operated from it felt like it operated from a stance of, if you don't have a title, then you don't have an opinion, you don't have a point of view, you don't have anything to offer. And that was really hard because, you know, I was a good teacher and, you know, did have ideas. And for me, like, just being in a place where, you know, your voice didn't matter, you know, I just couldn't align with that. And the other kind of main, yeah, it was definitely hierarchy, and it was just, you know, things had to be done, you know, a certain way. It was at the start of, you know, all slides have to look the same or all those kind of things, and I was just like, this is just ridiculous. And I just didn't agree.
the thing is you hear about that sometimes I talk with leaders and I would feel that that sort of leadership is in the past, but, you know, it's not. Some of that can be very present, that kind of scaremongering, or you know, that opinion, the opinions of the leaders are the correct ones, and it isn't, you know, about that idea of psychological safety that everybody's valued. So
yeah,
I think it's important to still share those things, that because they're still out there, that still happens. So I know that now you're not in that middle leadership position. Now you coach other sort of teachers and other staff working in education. So tell me about that shift. And I guess what I'm really fascinated in is you must now use so much of that learning that you had in your journey in terms of your coaching. Like, tell us about the shift that you took and then how you've utilized all of that knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, I think so that final school, you know, that was where I was introduced to coaching, and I just remember being like, what, I have to go and talk to someone? Like, that's weird. Why is there something wrong? And they're like, no, everyone asks if there's something wrong. It's like, no, it's just something we do here. And it was brilliant. And that that relationship that I said before with the head of faculty, you know, the first thing that coaching did was gave us strategies to be able to work, you know, together and those kind of things. As a head of humanities, it gave me space to give, you know, work out ideas, talk about dynamics. And what I found through coaching, that But that then got taken away from us, and it was more like, you know, we coach in our leadership style and things like that. And I kind of wanted that to be true, and would sort of try and lean into my line managers through that, but it just didn't work, because they're not there to be your space, they're there to get things done. So I am quite an advocate of coaching should be separate to, you know, any kind of line management procedures, because actually, you know, they just want to know that you know how to do the job. That, you know, they want to be able to trust you. They don't want to know the weaving that is going through your brain to get to that outcome. And yeah, so I benefited from coaching both at times of difficulty, but also just sometimes just taking stock or space or thinking. And then we got the opportunity to do some peer coaching. So we started to learn how to do it. And I kind of realized that I was good at it. Like, I was really just naturally good at it. And if you maybe think about some of the other things I've told you about confidence, to suddenly have that, like, wow, I'm good at this. And people are benefiting from it. It was a real kind of light bulb moment. And I then kind of went through this to-ing and fro-ing of, well, I really love teaching, but what is this new thing and how can they live alongside each other? And I really got to a point where I knew I had to choose, because it was taking so much to do both, and teaching is so hard as it is, you know, just to be a good teacher and a good middle leader, almost having another educational hobby that takes so much, you know, to be present with someone, to hold, to remember, to, you know, it takes all that brain capacity. And I just knew that I had to choose. I didn't feel like educational leadership had things to offer me that I would enjoy anymore. And I looked at a few assistant headships and things like that, and it was really hard to find schools where I felt I would align. And even if I did align with the school, it was like this much of the job spec that I actually wanted to do. And
I think that's so true, isn't it? When you, I was thinking about this, I don't know why, something about headship maybe, and it's the most insanely complex job. Well, I don't know about all the jobs that are out there, but it feels like the most insanely complex job that you have to do. Like, the list is endless, and they're so different, the amount of things that you need to do. And you're right, being a great teacher, which is ultimately the most important thing that we can all do, then you just add on, don't you? Add on all these different layers. And it is, I still don't really know how people hold it all, because it's hard.
And that's one of the reasons, like, I think about this a lot, because part of me is like, you know, if we make leaders more coaching and schools have, you know, teachers trained to be coaches, you know, that's brilliant because it's sustainable. But then on the other hand, I'm like, well, no, actually, because that's another thing that they have to be good at. It's another thing that a teacher has to hold. You've got to go the cognitive memory of, you know, was this told to me in a confidential coaching session, or was this told to me in a briefing, or in a, and like, it's just so much more demand on our brains. So I made the decision that coaching was the path for me, and that I would regret more not exploring that than I would like sort of staying teaching. I could come back to it if it was the wrong decision, but you know, putting it off. And I remember just thinking, you know, I'm 30, 36 at the time, I think. And I was like, I've got more of my career ahead of me than I've got behind me still, ever increasing. And I was like, I can't keep up at the pace I am working. And what's more is I just don't want to. I don't want a job where there isn't enough time in the day to actually do the job. So it's my evenings and my weekends. Like, I just don't want it.
And that's such an
that was
important shift that, and I, my own headship journey, that's the shift I remember having to take, because I felt like I can't, I'm failing, you know, impossible. And once I managed to make that shift across to actually, there's another choice. I can be in control and I can say, and it's okay to say, I don't want this anymore. Like, you're right, it can be for now. It doesn't have to be forever, isn't it? I think we set big ideas that choices are forever and it's got to be like back in the day when you chose a career and it was that career for the rest of your life. And yeah, that for me was a real turning point when I made that switch into, I actually don't want to, I'm going to make a different choice, because you feel more, well, you're in charge then, aren't you? You're in power, not like, oh, I'm having to make this choice, it's being put upon me.
Yeah, totally. And it was liberating and it was freeing, and it's not like it's not scary, because, and one of the things, it definitely came up for me, but it comes up a lot with teachers that I work with that are sort of transitioning out or thinking of it. And like, teaching is an identity, like it is who you are, and you put so much into it. And people really struggle that, you know, like, what, you know, what was it for if I'm not there forever? But, you know, once you have been a teacher, you know, you have had that impact on a young person's life. Once you've been a middle leader, you know, or you think about the teachers that you've trained, you know, your impact is there. And it doesn't get taken away from you just because you decide to do something else. And, you know, it's, I still get, you know, messages from, you know, some of the teachers that I've trained or whatever, just going like, I did this today, or, you know, thanks for showing me this. It's just coming in handy. And, you know, you, the good work that you did in the classroom or in a school, you know, it is good work because it lasts and lasts and lasts. And the same for, you know, how we started this about, you know, why I'm a teacher or what impact my schooling had on me. You know, you have done that for however many children. And even if your career's 10 years long instead of 40 years old, that is still a huge amount of young people that have benefited.
I think that's such a powerful message to share, because you're right that I've heard that from so many people. You know, that if you stop now, if you don't, but you're right, that's a really, really valuable point to share. So you made the leap, you took the terrifying jump, and tell us about what you do now and how you're using everything that you learn to support others.
Yeah, I think my first idea was that I really wanted to work with middle leaders because it was just such a difficult job, and you are there for everybody else. Like, you are just, your time is everyone else's. And that, you know, and I feel like I spent at least 5 years of my life with the only time I thought about me, and even by me I mean my own lessons, I don't even mean me as a human, was like in the shower, in the car, or in the middle of the night. Like, they were the three things where I could actually think about me. And now, so yeah, that was a kind of motivator that, you know, can I connect and support middle leaders? But as I've kind of come out a bit wider, it's like, well, actually, you know, if you're helping anybody in education, then you're helping more than one person. And so there is still a motivation for supporting middle leaders, but it's not as kind of narrow as that necessarily. And I, as part of the transactional analysis, I got introduced to a model called functional fluency, which is the most transferable model that I was ever taught. And it helped me understand my classroom dynamic, it helped me understand me, it helped me understand how to interact better. And this was, you know, maybe 8 years into my teaching career, and I was like, why have I only just been shown this now? So I work kind of sharing that model and helping people to see how that can give a language between themselves and students, or themselves and their colleagues. And I also do something called the TIFF profile, which works on that model, but it helps people understand where their energies are going into, and how they can maybe adjust their behaviours and what impact that would have on the people around them. So a lot of that is kind of interpersonal skills, and behaviour related work. I just do general coaching sessions either privately. So a lot of that work is either with people looking to move out of the classroom, but I also work with quite a few middle leaders who just benefit from having that space. And it's really nice to know that, like you said, my experience, you know, the other day I worked with someone that just was needed the space to think through their CPD session. And, you know, the other week I worked with, like you said, somebody that had had a really difficult start to the year and had got to February and none of the things that they planned to do had like been able to start. And you know, the session was around, okay, so we're here, but you have still got all this time. So what can we take from there and what can we do? It and it, you know, it turned that perspective around from this year's a washout to actually, like, I'm really excited to see how far we can get. So, you know, some of the work I do is very much still on those small elements of a teaching career that can have the big impact, but some of it is very much dealing with, you know, those confidence issues. A lot of people come when they're unsure about what their next step is, or they're going to interview but for, you know, the next stage of their career, and they're like, oh, can I do this, and all those kind of things. So sometimes it's really practical and sometimes it's, you know, those much bigger pieces of work.
Yeah, it's so valuable to be able to have that impact. Like you said, it's continued work, isn't it? Continuing to impact on staff who are working with children. So it's a knock on. I was really interested when you talked a little bit earlier around the value of having somebody external to your setting or school. And you're right. It's, you know, it's great to have a really good relationship with your lead in what, you know, whatever your line manager, whatever that is, but actually you can only be as honest as you can be in that scenario. Even if you have a great relationship with them, having an external completely separate space to go and say whatever it is that you need to say, positive, negative, and to find that space to reflect on the things that are working well or not so well, because it's sort of, for me, it feels like a foundation. So wherever you are, coaching or supervision or reflective work steps you up a notch, doesn't it? So actually, yes, if things are tough, it's going to give you that helping hand. If things are working really well, you can still take it further. And yeah, I mean, the work that I have done with leaders, it feels so valuable, doesn't it? It's a really great thing to do. And so you've been doing that since September, is that right? So,
yeah,
amazing. And I guess, what else do you feel like kind of is next? What are the other things that you feel are coming for Steph and the things that you're going to do? Because the experience you've had so far has been really fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because there's definitely a piece of self-work that is going on at the moment of, you know, how do you transition out from teaching? Because teaching is this preset plan. And what is at the moment in front of me is like, well, I'd like to do this and I'd like to do that and I'd like to, and what order do I do them in? And so there's definitely a few different options that I'm exploring as what is the next part of the kind of bigger business model. But what I've really decided is that I am, you know, certain that coaching is the right path. So it's possible group coaching will be next, but it might not be. But definitely the things that are certain is that growing the coaching offer and getting as many people to experience how it can be transformative in so many different elements of life, and raising awareness about how the functional fluency model can really transform classroom relationships, and you know the impact that that had on my understanding of classroom, of leadership, was absolutely huge. And what I love about it is that the language within the model is really accessible. So I have this like huge mat, and I've worked with students talking about, you know, how they are perceiving what's happening in the classroom versus what, you know, is really happening, and, you know, why the teacher might be responding them to in that way based on their behaviours, and but also, you know, vice versa, and looking at the teacher to reflect on that. And, you know, what is it about how you gave that message that elicited that response? So yeah, really, I'm really passionate about how wider knowledge of functional fluency can really help classroom behaviours and relationships.
Sounds like life-changing skills. And I think, as you were talking about the sort of the middle leaders, because coaching itself is becoming more popular in the educational world, but certainly for head teachers. But you're right, that middle leadership strand, that bit feels that actually, yeah, who's there for them? Because you're stretched, aren't you? You feel like you're on a kind of stretch board. You've got teachers needing your support, you've got parent, you know, children, you've got staff, and then you've got your senior leadership who are stretching you in lots of different ways. So I can see that that would be so valuable. Thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing to speak to you. I think it'd be really great if you could just share how, if people are interested in functional fluency and kind of working with you or finding out more, how can, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
My LinkedIn profile is probably my kind of most active. So you can definitely find me on there. You can find me on Twitter or X.
Well, still used to that.
Yeah, no, it's just not very easy to say. I X'd. So Coach Steph C, or Instagram is Stephanie Carling Coaching. So they're the best places to find me. But that's my coaching is better than my social media game, is all I will say.
Well, great. That's as it. That is absolutely as it should be. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. It's been really fascinating to speak to you and hear about your journey. I've loved it. Thank you, Steph.
No worries. It's been great to meet you and chat with you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Stories of School Leadership podcast. We'd love to know what inspired you in this episode. So do get in touch and tell us your thoughts. And please share this with friends and colleagues. If you have time, a review would mean so much. It really helps us to reach more people. If you'd like to connect with me to follow my journey or access some support, maybe supervision, coaching, or early years consultancy, you can find me at Stories of School Leadership on Instagram. I'm Emma Lurie on LinkedIn, or my website is emmalurie.co.uk. I hope you have a great day, whatever you're getting up to next, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.